Welcome to Crane Radio. Celebrate a life well lived.
Welcome to Season 2 of The Modern Crone, the rise of the energy arts. This season, I'm talking with the most highly regarded and established energy healers that I know about their views on energy, the psyche, and the dazzling capacities of the human system. We will be exploring 6 different energy healing modalities, and together we'll take the energy arts from woo-woo to wow-wow and deepen the narrative of what I and many believe to be the future of healing and wellness science. I hope you feel inspired. It is my pleasure to introduce our guest for this episode of The Modern Crone, Bharti Jati Varma. Bharti is a holistic therapist conducting various services through her offering here in Singapore called Mind and on behalf of Illuminations Wellbeing Centre in Dubai. Bharti's passion and communication skills make her extremely popular in front of larger audiences. She's also a chosen favourite with corporate programs due to her ability and flexibility to connect anyone and everyone. With a background in psychology and a keen interest to explore the intricacies of the human mind-body energy system, she has studied in hypnotherapy, spiritual response, and energy healing approaches. Through her personal journey of self-discovery and self-development, Bharti learnt to distance herself from any limiting patterns and beliefs that prevented her from achieving her true potential of happiness, success, and harmony in her everyday life. Her aim is to educate others about personal transformation through the energy arts. Her expertise in various approaches allows her to offer a more holistic and bespoke approach while working with clients. Bharti, welcome to The Modern Crone. How are you today?
Thank you so much for having me here, Dani. It's absolutely a pleasure to be here.
I agree, because when we spoke and we connected when we were talking about doing this episode, it became very apparent that you and I have a similar fascination in that there's this space, I guess, between Western modalities, and for you that psychology and psychoanalysis, but then also the energy arts and bringing those together as a complementary offering. So could you explain for our listeners, and I know this may not be easy to do, but what is it that you offer?
All right. So my journey has, you know, started from a very keen interest at a very young age about what's more, okay? And from a very young age, I was very interested to know, where have I come from and where am I going? It can't be just about going to school and coming back and, you know, all of that. And I always was very interested in the metaphysical world. So I wanted to know about life before, life after. I wanted to know about reincarnation. And that was at a very young age. And then obviously, as we go along life, we kind of, you know, lose touch with that aspect of us, or we kind of close it down. And then later on, I got interested in taking up the subject of psychology. And that's where I understood more about the mind per se and, you know, Freud and how childhood and everything, development. But there was still this huge surge, this search inside that something is missing here. The links are missing. And then after many more years of just kind of pondering with it, reading, I did a lot of reading at that point of time, especially Dr. Brian Weiss, past life regression was something that was very of interest to me. And then after many, many years, I literally just one fine day woke up and said that there has to be more and I need to do that. It was like a calling. Mm-hmm. I gave up my job and that's when I started studying hypnotherapy. I was in Dubai at that point of time. I started studying hypnotherapy. I went through the entire journey. It was more like just healing yourself from within and finding that space that you knew you have inside of you and then bringing together all your knowledge that nothing went waste. So whatever I studied over the years, it all kind of came together. And that's when I started working in this line, bringing just both the aspects together.
So what was the first step into the energy arts? And you've mentioned hypnotherapy, but, you know, that's still very much a psychoanalytical tool, isn't it?
Again, it depends how you have been trained into hypnotherapy.
Okay.
So the modalities that I worked with, they include a lot of spiritual work along with hypnotherapy. So it's a beautiful program of 5 levels, and you really go through understanding the mind. You go through understanding how a child develops, what frames them. And then from there, you go into karma work, you go into energy work, you go into cord cutting.
Interesting.
So, yeah. So it's a full journey that kind of takes you through all aspects of physical. So you understand what it is and then go deeper into the energy work, even taking it up to things like vows and oaths, for example.
Yeah, my work's the same. Yeah, that's a podcast in itself, and isn't it?
That becomes so holistic, because then you're not looking at a client like, okay, you're coming in and I need to do hypnotherapy and I've already made up my mind that you need inner child work. No, you're really seeing the layers and from where it's coming. And you go deep down into that core issue and work with them.
Beautiful. And so what's a typical engagement with you look like?
Right. So usually how I work is that initially I like to have a conversation with the client. It could be online, or it could be we could meet at a coffee shop or at my place where I work. Just have a conversation to understand what they are looking for. Because many a times the client themselves don't know what they're looking for. Mm. Either someone's recommended, you know, and they feel it might help them. Sometimes they've just tried so many things on their own and it's not worked. Sometimes it could be that, you know, they've gone through a very difficult phase and now they're just looking for someone to hear them out. So I first like to understand from them what they are looking for. Then I share my observations with them. I share how I've connected the dots for them with their permission. Then it could be, if it's just something which is, you know, some people say, okay, I just want a script, for example, for my subconscious and you help me record it. It could be a one-off session. But I do let them know that that may work, but it may not create the transformation you're looking for. And if you are ready energetically, as well as if you have the time, then we can delve deeper into why you started in this, you know, in this weakness or in this lack to begin with.
Right.
So typically a session would be, say, minimum, I would say, would be 3 sessions. But for so many things, it can go up to 5, 7. Because as you know, Dani, healing happens in layers.
It sure does.
Yeah. So then with the permission of the client, we see. So we set goals. I like to set goals, because otherwise the client's not going to find benefit. And most important, I like my clients to take ownership for their own healing. So I'm just a facilitator. I will guide you through what I'm picking up. It's your choice whether you take that or you don't take that. But after that, it's also up to you to follow up with it. So whether it's post-session exercises, affirmations, 7 minutes meditations, just stillness, mindfulness, whatever it is that works for you. But you have to show that commitment towards yourself.
Yeah, I agree. And it's that putting that commitment in action, even if it's in a very minimal way, you know. So I operate in a very similar way. So I'll often send my clients off with what I call spirit homework and give them the tools that I have that can help them, or, you know, different ideas to work with. Even if there's just a small commitment in action towards their healing, whether it's just daily breath work for 10 minutes, or that starts to generate some big change, doesn't it?
Absolutely. I think that is where the real healing for them begins, when they take that ownership, when they take that empowerment comes to them.
Yeah, absolutely. I agree with that. So for you, what are your go-to tools as a healer?
So I try to make things very simple, because I have 2 young kids and we have busy schedules, right? So I definitely try and meditate, even if it is for like 5 or 7 minutes, as soon as I get up in the morning. That's one thing that I try to follow at all times.
Yep.
Besides that, I like to put in grounding activities. So even if I'm going down for a walk, I set the intention. I really believe in intention work. You don't have to sit in that space for 1 hour if you cannot. Because many a times I notice, if I put that intention that I want to sit for 1 hour and I don't have the time, I can start being a little harsh on myself.
Yep.
Right? And that just defeats the purpose.
Yep.
So if you just accept that, okay, through the day, I'm going to do these 8-10 different things. And that's how I empower my clients as well. Because many of them are like, I really don't have the time to sit down like a yogi for 30 minutes.
Yep.
Or I'm not in the space to do it yet. So I do empower them with that. But for myself, I do try to get my longer meditations. I really resonate with sound. So I do some sound healing for myself. That's something I do. If I'm enjoying myself, I sometimes do cards for myself. So I'll pick up my own tarot and get some readings for the week, get the theme. Yeah. So grounding is one of the most important things for me. I love energy work. So for anything that's happening, tapping is something that just happens naturally for me.
Yep.
So I will start tapping if I'm feeling nervous about something or if I'm anxious about something.
Beautiful. Yeah, yeah. Me too. We sound very similar in our medicine bag. Yes.
The toolkit is important.
Of maintenance. Yeah. So I've got so many questions I want to ask you. So let's go to hypnotherapy. So I've never been hypnotized.
Oh, really?
And
then we must.
Yeah. I trust you. So that's one of the reasons why I don't think I've ever really felt compelled to do it. I haven't felt a need to do it. But I'd also be very, very circumspect about who hypnotizes me, because you really are quite vulnerable and kind of laid bare in that light trance. Would you call it a light trance state?
It is a trance.
Yeah.
It is a trance state, but it's not what we see on stage. That's not what we do. Because a lot of people, their biggest misconception and fear about hypnotherapy is that, you know, I've seen stage hypnosis and you become like a dog or you start
a chicken.
Doing...
Yeah.
So I keep assuring them that's not what we do. That's not what we're trained for. We're clinically going to help you through the layers of your mind. We'll help you to go into a deep relaxation state where your conscious mind can just let go for a while and you go within your own space. And that's very, very awesome.
It's very awesome. And it's also, we know as well, is that when we are dwelling in that state of pure present awareness, that's when our body heals physically as well, doesn't it?
So absolutely.
There's you know, so much evidence, thank goodness now, for people like us, you know, and research that shows that there are these different states that we can cultivate within the mind space, which then triggers the healing mechanisms of the body. And, you know, I think in some ways that's really the healing dynamic of Reiki. So Reiki creates, as you know, because you're a Reiki practitioner, but it creates that beautiful deep shift in brainwave patterning, right? If they can really let go, right into a lovely prolonged theta state, that's where the healing takes place. So the energy is working with the natural innate healing mechanism of the system.
True. We all have that energy within us, and sometimes it's just that belief and that ability to receive it that can change a lot of things within us. And even with hypnotherapy, since you mentioned that before, what we do is we allow the person to experience their own body through a very different perspective, you know.
That's cool.
Yeah, so something like organ regeneration, for example, if someone has a diagnosis. It's interesting to note that so many people can start feeling so many symptoms the minute the diagnosis is made. And then the body loses its ability, or let's say that connection to that universal intelligence it has, right?
Yep.
And once that connection is lost, the person starts getting more and more sick, or the intensity or the severity of that diagnosis gets more and more. Once you allow them to know that through your mind, you can change that, it's surprising how many success stories you come across after that. So the body has that ability to heal itself. The body has that ability to heal when the mind is aligned to that healing.
Totally agree. Yeah, totally agree. And what this conversation and what our work is really showing, though, is the enormous creative potential and capacity of the human system. I mean, we're creating our experiences all the time, aren't we?
Every moment. And that is why so many people come and say, okay, can you do a prediction or a reading, right? So I'm not very for readings or predictions. I can tell them that we can do a guidance, and that guidance would then depend on two things. One, yes, there are many factors that bring together possibilities, and then there is your free will. Now, with your free will, whatever choice you make in this moment, if you think you're going to fail at it, that's the window that's going to open up. And that's the reading that anyone's going to give you, because that's what you're holding within you.
Yep.
So ultimately, it boils down to what you are really thinking, feeling, and wanting.
Absolutely, I agree. So I do readings, but in exactly the context that you've described. So I know that nothing's fixed, nothing's fated, nothing's fixed. We're in this big soup of potential. And the way that I guess like to explain it is that what we are feeding with our life force generates a pattern which brings from that soup of potentiality a more possible, then a more probable, then a phenomenon.
Yes.
That we experience. So we're funneling from potentiality all the time what we're giving our life force to, and we give our life force through what we believe, what we fear,
yes,
what we call for, what we yearn for. These are all generative emanations of energy, which then have an influence on how energy, as it transmutes into phenomenon, works.
Right. And, you know, I explain this in very similar to what you're saying, but to in a lot of my workshops, and especially in training, the way I explain it to them is it's about your compatibility. So if in this moment of time, I am compatible to a certain frequency, which says that things are going to work out for me, then from that universal space, because I'm compatible to that frequency that is going to work out for me, I will hook myself or link myself to receive that.
Yep.
But at the same time, I can struggle, effort, put in 20 hours of work. But if I believe, and I believe that it's not going to work out for me, or it comes very, very difficult for me, then that is my compatibility.
Correct.
I will keep touching it, but not holding it.
Yep. Correct. Correct. Oh, yeah. We're talking the same language. I love the way you express it. I mean, but it's not new, this stuff, is it? I mean, this is basically the principle of Western magic. This is the principle of shamanic work as well, like this. But somehow I think in this modern age, we've lost contact with our creative ability. And also a lot of those beliefs and a lot of those fears, which you touched on earlier, are unconscious. So we may be buying into, let's just say, a lack mentality. Like I'll make do. I believe that there's not enough to go around. But it may not be a conscious belief. But we might have grown up in a family of origin that held that, and it's in us. It's in our operating system, but it's just unconscious. So that's where the hypnosis comes in, really.
Definitely,
isn't it? Yeah.
That is the basis, and it. As our job, it is important to show the client that unconsciously, this is what is controlling. You are not in the driving seat of what you want.
Yep.
Yeah, it is these various beliefs. Simple example, I get so many clients who are struggling to get married, right?
Yep.
And they will come and say that, you know, my heart chakra is blocked. So I'm like, no, it's not only about your heart chakra. Let's get deeper into it. And then as you start talking to them, you understand consciously they want to get married. They may be on Tinder. They may be on different dating apps. They may be meeting people. But at the background, there is this fear that marriage is a huge responsibility.
Yep.
Or I'm going to lose my freedom after marriage. Until they address that and kind of dissipate that, it's not going to work.
It's not going to happen, yeah. And another similar example of what we're talking about is I work with a lot of women who are trying to conceive. And it's hard, right? So you've got that beautiful maternal longing, but at the same time you're trying to mitigate any disappointment, especially in the IVF cycle. And so there's kind of this wishy-washy half, well, I super want it, but I don't want to want it too much because I don't want to be disappointed. So in those situations, which is quite common, I sort of have to really give them a little bit of a strong tip and say, well, what have you got to lose? Yearn for it. Believe it's yours, you know, because the desire for, let's just say in this example, whether it be wellness or a little baby or a beautiful experience of love in your life, It's coming from somewhere. It's not a random desire. Like you, this desire for this is being generated and coming from what I believe is the reality of it, which is just outside of your experience reality. And so it does require, what's the word, you know, a bit of a bungee jump, doesn't it?
Like
a
leap of faith.
A leap of faith. And just so the way I frame it with some of my clients is just treat it like a spiritual experiment. So just for the next 3 months, let's just pretend that it's yours. It's destined for you, even though we're not really I don't really go for destiny, and that you're feeling the desire for this baby because this baby is just hovering but behind your gaze.
Right.
And sometimes that's enough. In fact, often that's enough. I've got a pretty good hit rate on the pregnancy.
Yes, yes. Yeah. Same here. I work with so many women over these years, especially for pregnancy.
Yeah.
Because there is a part of us which is very innate, which is very nourishing, which wants that experience. But there is also a part of us, the yin side, which believes that somewhere we're going to miss out.
Yep.
If we go into that experience. And that is so common with so many women.
Yeah, it is. Yeah, it's there's such powerful emotions when it comes to
And visualization works beautifully for that.
It does. Yeah, it's gorgeous. Yeah.
Visualization is one of the key approaches even in hypnotherapy.
Is it?
Yes, because there could be many a times that as a child, someone may not have experienced what it is to feel safe, right? Yep. Now, even if they have all the resources, maybe they've done phenomenally well at work, they do not feel safe in their own skin. They do not know what it feels to be safe. Then you have to create that experience for them. And that you do through visualization.
Beautiful. So while they're in the hypnotic state.
So in that hypnotic state, you help them to build a picture or a story which they can now anchor as safety, as security. So when those triggers of anxiety or feeling that, you know, everything's going to flow away from them, that insecurity pipes in, they go back to that image and it's easier to get the feeling when you get into that image.
I love that. Yeah, yeah. So creating a whirlpool of vibration that they can tap. Do you use, I'm guessing that you also work with people dealing with trauma and long-held trauma. Now, that's a technique as well, isn't it, of actually guiding them back into where the originating event took place or events took place that created the trauma and then building a new memory? Would that be the right way to say it?
It is. Basically, you reframe. You reframe the emotion. So even, for example, working with rape victims, it's very difficult to go back to that experience. And not always is it advisable to go back, depending on the person, what it is. But what's important to do is to reframe, because there could be multiple reasons that's causing that trauma. It could be just their own body. It could be just a certain thought. It could be a choice they made at that point of time that they're struggling with. So you have to try and understand what they're going through and help them reframe those emotions. And that can be done through various ways. A lot of energy works beautifully for that, because you don't want them to go too much into the thought body at that point of time.
Yeah.
So a lot of energy work. But visualization of seeing themselves differently, of being more, being just more forgiving on themselves, helps them differently.
Yeah, well, especially around sexual trauma,
there's
a lot of loaded up shame and guilt and really, really heavy emotional grids that have been attached onto that as well, isn't there?
Tired of working from home? Maybe you're just looking to add some scenery to your morning commute. Instead of just walking from your room to your bathroom to your kitchen to your room, add a stop at Crane, where you can work, play, dine, shop, and socialize within restrictions at $99 a month.
One of the things that I see with some clients, not all, is where there's a reluctancy to claim the potential of healing because so much of their personality and their story has been built up on not being well.
Yes.
Or being a bit of a victim.
Yes.
So, and you see that as well, you're nodding
definitely
vigorously. And so, which is kind of legitimate in a way, you know, like if you, if your marriage, for example, is based on a savior dynamic and your husband swooped in like the knight on the horse, then this is just one small example. You can kind of see the hesitancy of the woman then going, well, if I become strong, empowered and well again, what does that mean for my relationship? You know, so how do you deal with this, story and identity construct, which is built up on not being well?
Again, it's, and this is so right what you said. This is basically one of the reasons where people cannot break out of what they want to break out of, yeah, at some level as well. What happens with the subconscious mind is, and it's interesting to note this, is that the subconscious mind does not have the ability to, you know, distinguish between what is right and what is wrong. It's like a photocopying machine.
Yep.
So if you've had an experience, it will always push you towards the same experience. Now that in your conscious space may not be the right experience for you in this moment. Take addictions, yep, take abusive relationships, take being in, recurring patterns, wrong patterns that you're constantly in. Yep. Consciously, you know, you don't want that. You want to break out of it. But subconsciously, because it is a known, it will keep pushing you towards the same experience. And then what really helps is to help the person go back into their subconscious mind. Notice how they've identified with those patterns, even though they don't want it. But they've identified with those patterns, and then help them to kind of create a new story and then allow that story to repeat itself. The triggers will go then.
Beautiful. And it is in the repetition,
yes,
isn't it? I mean, yes. We know that from neuroplasticity, but we, in terms of the neural networks that support the new behaviours, but it's true with the energy work as well, isn't it?
It is. And in fact, even in the body, I'll give you an example of someone who I'd met. She was in her, I think she was in her 50s, and she had tremendous knee pain, all right? And her son would be constantly traveling, but every now and then he would go back, meet her, take her to the doctors, you know, get everything done. Everything was all right. The tests were all right. The doctor was like, there's something, maybe you should meet someone and do something else. Finally, I got to meet her. And eventually, after a couple of sessions, what came out was that, you know, when I'm in pain, my son has the time to come and meet me.
Aye, there it is.
And the minute it was evident to her that that's what she was doing, the knee pain just vanished.
Yeah.
It just miraculously disappeared. It was not in her physical body.
Yeah, amazing. Yeah. And, I do know a couple of people definitely in Singapore that have got mysterious chronic pain. And I hope they're listening to this, and I hope they get in contact with you, because everything has an energetic cause. I mean, this is what the energy arts is really about. Everything is energy,
yeah,
and it's patterned energy, and it's either dissonant or it's harmonic, and that's the role of the healer, is to point that out and cultivate, or at least give tools to cultivate a harmonic patterning within the energy of a person. You mentioned before, you know, this connection between, I'm going to use different words because I can't remember the words you used, but this sort of universal order, mm-hmm, to things, which we do see in nature. We see it in the wilderness. We see it in the elements. We see it in the planet and how it balances itself out and so on. And we do see it in the human body.
Right.
So the human body has, like all of nature, has an innate desire to be well, which...
That's our natural state.
It's our natural state. It's not natural to be unwell.
Right.
Which I think would be surprising for a lot of people to hear, because
yes,
our, I'm going to say, Western medical models, and particularly pharmaceutical models, really thrive on the opposite paradigm, that it's normal to be ill. And
then you got to take something from the outside, correct, to kind of heal that.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And also treat the symptom. Treat,
yes,
the symptom. And so, you mentioned this universal order. I guess some people call it the source energy, mm-hmm, or the pure, undistorted, patterned energy that brings all of this shooting match to bear. But then you mentioned when our system in some way, whether it be in our beliefs or even in the way we're treating our body and our habits or whatever, gets out of alignment with that energy. So is what you're talking about what some other people refer to as our natural blueprint? Have you heard that term before?
Yes.
You know, the sort of health blueprint. And so it operates better. We have a blueprint for maximum health,
yes,
vitality. That's what I'm getting at.
Yes. So even when I mentioned to you about the organ regeneration, for example, what we're really tapping into is our ability to connect with the organ has its natural blueprint to be healthy and well.
Yep.
And we are now bringing that energy. Many a times our beliefs, our thoughts, our patterns, our emotions, they come in the way from receiving that natural flow of universal energy, that intelligence that is going to keep the cells aligned.
Yep.
When that supply is kind of broken off, that's when the organ goes into a degeneration or it goes into any kind of symptoms. By doing those exercises and by using the element of energy, what we're doing is we are making way once again for that energy to flow. Once that energy flows, you will come back to its natural state.
Yep. Yep, and it can regenerate in pretty in pretty amazing ways.
In
as well.
Very amazing ways.
Yeah, the body is incredible. Would you say that someone who like a potential client or someone who's listening to this, because I think this is where some people get a bit stuck with energy work, is that they balk at it because there perhaps is a misconception that you need to believe in some kind of deity or benevolent force or... And I can see you shaking your head, and I am too. You don't have to have any kind of prescribed religious construct to be able to understand and work with the energy arts, do you?
No, you don't. You don't. And in fact, we don't go that way at all.
Yeah.
Because we purely believe that all religions, they come from the same spiritual space. They are given different names, they are given different archetypes, and we are tapping directly into the main source.
Yep.
That's one. Secondly, a lot of clients may not be inclined towards religion, so we don't enter that space. The only thing, when someone is very skeptical about the universal flow of energy, I just ask them to think about gravity. We don't see it, but yet we are constantly on the ground and not floating around.
Yep.
And in the same way, there are other forces of energy that are working through us. Most often they buy that. And then we work with that.
So good. And so for you, like, and we laughed about this the other day when we, well, it was a little while ago we spoke, but how once you enter into the energy arts, you never really arrive, do you? Like it's almost like the energy itself is also guiding and teaching you and introducing you to new tilts on what you know, new teachers, new information and so on. So are you finding that as well, that the more you develop and ripen your offering, the more you realize there is to offer?
Yes. I feel every client who comes across, again, like I mentioned, that whole compatibility, every client I meet, I always learn something new from them.
Yeah.
Always. And they have come into my life at that point for a certain reason. I don't believe in coincidences. I do believe everything in synchronicity.
Yep.
And today's a beautiful synchronicity day with
sure
all the tools.
Sure is. Two, 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 two.
Yeah.
Yep.
So I really believe in synchronicity and alignment. And it's amazing how a client will mention something and the next day I realize that there is something in it for me, and that's going to open up another chapter. That's going to open up another journey.
Always.
I'm going to come across someone who wants to do something. I met you through something.
Yeah.
So, you know, it's just one thing leads you on to another.
It does.
And it's a constantly growing process.
And it's super magical. You know, I'm a Jungian freak. So I'm studying Jung. I love Jung. I love the synergy between Jung and what we're talking about,
right.
And the beautiful scarab beetle, which really triggered his exploration of, and then he ended up presenting, didn't he, a paper,
right,
which is what made him split from Freud in the end,
yes,
on the law of synchronicity. But there's something massively magical about that, I think, where it just brings this layer of mystery and gorgeousness into life where, like you said, the client will mention something, there's an exploration to be had there. It ripples again through a book that's gifted to you. It ripples again through a dream. And there's a patterning, there's patterns. I call it pattern picking with my communities. And we actually mind map them and journal them as they come in. And the more you engage in the synchronous patterns of meaning around you, the clearer they become too, don't they?
I just love how vibration works. I love how patterns work. I truly believe in law of attraction.
Yep.
I practice that myself. I teach that to my clients. I teach that to my children.
Yep.
You know, we play games with it. Like with my kids, I'll tell them, okay, one of them will be like, I want to do this or I want to get this. I'm like, okay, think about it, visualize it and see it happen. And then the younger one will come and say, yeah, law of attraction made it happen. It's there now.
Yes, so good.
Yeah. And so many ways to kind of build your own intuitiveness by tapping into that pattern. It really shifts you from within.
It does. Yeah, it's beautiful. In fact, I've had a very current example of this. I do these meditation drop-ins on Zoom every fortnight. They're for charity. And I'm doing an archetype season. So last night we did the Weaver.
All right.
And we talked about the myths of Arachne and the Greek fates, the weavers, and the Navajo legend of Grandmother Spider. And then we did a meditation where we connected with the archetype sort of mainlined. It was beautiful. And there was, I can't remember how many people were on the call. I don't know. I think there was about 10 people.
Mm-hmm.
All of them, they didn't know each other, all had very similar visions, which was cool, same colours, same symbols. But then I've received all these beautiful messages today because I said to them when we ended off, you know, have a lovely fortnight with the weaver.
Mm-hmm.
She's weaving. And I've had on my WhatsApp photographs of a little spider.
Amazing.
Someone else walked through a beautiful spider's web, but, you know, and just these touches of the weaver, which is synchronicity, isn't it?
Yes,
their
it is.
Awareness has lit up that pattern.
And people who need to come together, especially with these group healings, group energy, group meditation, they come together. And the experiences they have, and same, I do these group meditations as well. And then we share our experiences after the meditation is over. And another person just starts crying while one person is narrating their experience. And it just completely makes sense to her.
Absolutely.
And
it's gorgeous.
You're like, this is not magic. It's just synchronicity. This is amazing.
That's how it works.
This is how it works.
So here's a question for you, given that we're sort of sliding around Jung a little bit here, is, you know, obviously he was one of the first to really coin this idea of the collective.
Yes. The collective consciousness.
The collective consciousness. So really what we're talking about here in terms of these synchronous patterns and also what we've observed in group work, it does portend to a shared level of consciousness, doesn't it?
Yes. Yeah. I think, again, if you look at the energy, if I just take it now to the chakra system, because I'm very passionate about that as well. If you move to the energy of the crown, that is that collective source where you kind of disintegrate your own ego, you disintegrate your separation, and you merge completely into that oneness. And when you merge into that oneness, everyone who's around you, not only locationally, but anywhere on this planet, you tap into that.
Yep.
You tap into that completely.
Yep.
And you feel that energy. And so many people have felt that during these deep sessions of healing or meditations.
Yeah, it's just absolutely beautiful to observe. But I also think, and we did talk about this when we caught up last, was it can also work the other way, can't it? So, like, for example, we're setting off into the third year of this pandemic. Thankfully, it looks like things are opening up now, but not so much in Singapore, but we'll get there. But what I've observed over the last couple of years is, not with everyone, but I think people are being affected by the collective fear, you know. So I've got people that will come in, for example, we've talked about this with other healers as well, where they may have a funny patch of eczema or something, but they've gone from funny patch of eczema to stage 4 skin cancer in their mind. They catastrophize. And they're rational, intelligent people who wouldn't normally go shoot down a fear tunnel so quickly. And I've seen enough of it to really believe that I think they're being impacted by the collective fear.
Absolutely.
Have you observed that with your clients?
Yes, definitely. Because at the end of the day, we are all energetic beings, right? We may address it, we may acknowledge it, we may not, and that's all right. But the simple fact that we are in this field of energy that surrounds us, when this energy is vibrating at a very beautiful, light, love-based energy, openness energy, even if you've had a bad day, you feel good.
Yep.
Right? But if you are yourself in a fear-based mode or you are in an insecure mode, and then this energy with all its impact is all around you, you will take on much stronger, even though you are working on yourself. And you may have noticed that in these last 2-3 years as well. However much work we do on ourselves, there are moments where it kind of creeps in.
Yep.
And then with awareness, you can instantly kind of shift that. But not everyone has the tools to do that. They just soak it all in and it becomes one with their body. It becomes one. And that's where, and skin you mentioned is a great example, because our entire energetic boundaries are to do with our skin as well.
Yep. Yep.
So that's one of the first places where you will notice if you have weak boundaries. And at night, if you're hearing all the news and the numbers, and in the day you're seeing which country is going through what, it is going to impact you.
Yep, fantastic. And I do think it's interesting that, you know, skin ailments have become quite prevalent over the last couple of years, because I think
Boundaries
are being compromised. We're maxed out on collective vibration, which isn't ours.
Yeah. And the root chakra is getting weaker and weaker, with stability being a key factor that is under threat.
Absolutely. And I think as well, with all this containment with COVID, we haven't been able to get out into the wilderness. We haven't been able to go to our sacred spaces. A lot of people have been bound inside their homes. And so those natural earthing mechanisms which play into Muladhara at the base, we've been sort of cut off a little bit from them,
definitely,
haven't we?
Definitely. And that is why it's so important to ground yourself. So important to ground yourself, even though you have, especially because relationships right now have been under so much of duress with this whole pandemic in place. You haven't met the ones you want to meet. You're stuck with people you don't want to be with. So a lot of time that itself is creating a very weak foundation. The minute you have a weak foundation, the other chakras do tend to leak energy. You will leak energy from the solar. You will disconnect from your true intuitive self. You will absorb the negativity more easily. So yeah, that has been happening.
Yeah, it's incredible to watch, isn't it? Yeah, but and so for example, like, what if you had a client, for example, who can't readily access the wilderness, or all of the usual beautiful earthing and grounding techniques, but let's just say they're bound in a wheelchair, for example, what sort of grounding techniques would you give them to do?
Many things they can do. They can work with purely visualization. Yep. They can place, if they have feet, they can place it even on their chair on the floor and imagine roots going into the earth.
Yep.
That's a beautiful way to kind of bring it in. Crystals would work wonderfully for them.
Yep.
Sound healing would work beautifully for them. Binaural frequencies can work for
them. Yeah, beautiful. Yeah. The other thing that I love working with my clients who are bound inside is digital recordings of the wilderness.
Yes.
Because there's patterns in that that can't be replicated.
I share so many binaural frequencies with the sounds of the ocean, with the sounds of the forest. Yeah,
beautiful. Yeah, it's gorgeous. There's lots of studies on that too, but mainly from the psychological arena about mental wellness. But
even energetically, Danny, because the minute you have a certain frequency that's around you, it is natural for you to kind of adapt towards it. If you're in a very negative setup, depending on how much awareness you have, you will hold yourself to be in your positive state for as long as you can. But there's a threshold.
Yep.
If you're constantly surrounded by negativity or by lower frequencies, you may let your guard down and get triggered by it. Same. So if you now start changing the vibration around you with the intention to kind of make yourself feel better, it will start shifting what you feel about yourself.
Beautiful. So it's either a sort of an outward upward spiral or a downward inward spiral. And that's where having a stable base is really key.
Very important.
Really important.
The more grounded you are, the lesser triggered you will be.
Yep.
Or at least your ability to come out of that trigger will be much quicker.
Yeah.
But the lesser grounded you are, the slightest thing can trigger you and you can stay in that space for a long time.
You can loop it, hook weave it back in. Yeah, I agree, and I think when we're on stable inner ground, which is cultivated, and it needs to be cultivated, you know, like with what we were talking about before, a little bit of meditation or whatever it is that helps you sort of cultivate your presence, you're better off actually, you're in a better position to be able to witness what's triggering you. And there's a little pause point there, isn't there,
yes,
that needs to be cultivated where you can choose your response. So you're not looping.
That's,
you know,
the gap.
That's the gap.
The pause that is important.
The pause.
And that's what so many people discuss, that, okay, so you meditate regularly, but you get triggered. Yes, I do. Of course I do. But how long do I choose to hold on to that trigger is now going to determine how much work I have done and how much work I need to do on myself.
Absolutely, yeah. And, you know, if you've got a well-cultivated pause, you can choose a response which is counter to what you'd normally do. Like, you can actually really intentionally disrupt these patterns, can't you? So,
yes.
Like, often in my talks that I give, I use the example of if someone cuts you off in the traffic.
Mm-hmm.
And if you're so compressed, you'll honk, out goes the finger out,
yes,
the window. You might drive along beside them and give them a greasy look from your window. But if you've got a cultivated pause, you can be annoyed and go, oh, well, that wasn't very safe or very respectful. But then you can actually move into a much more compassionate space, can't you? And go, they're obviously not thinking.
Yes.
They're obviously fried. I'll say a little prayer for them instead.
That is so beautiful you said that, and that has been the journey from where I've moved as well, from getting extremely triggered on the road to kind of realizing that, okay, must be in a rush,
yeah.
God bless you.
Yeah, yeah, be safe.
Yeah. And you know what, one more thing you mentioned is so interesting for the pause, is that in hypnotherapy we have something, we do a questionnaire where we do the suggestibility of a person.
Ooh.
Okay, so the suggestibility of a person is basically the ability of a person to take in information. And we're not talking about response here. We're talking about the way people take in information. The same conversation we are having, 10 people will take it in differently depending on their value system, their beliefs, the way they have grown up.
Their lens,
yeah. Their filters. And that suggestibility, Danny, does not change after a certain period of time. So after the crucial years, by the time you are 12 years of age, 12, 13, that suggestibility is not going to change. What changes is your ability to what you throw out, what we call as sexuality. So your sexuality can change. I can choose to be someone different with life experiences, with learning, with skills. I can alter my response,
yep,
right? But that ability to take in information, that trigger will always remain. And that is why that pause is so important.
That's so interesting, because often and I'm sure you have this as well, you'll have clients that may come back in a bit deflated and they'll go, here I go again.
Yes.
Like, I thought I'd done all the work. And my first response is, well, first of all, you have shifted because you can see it.
Your awareness to the fact that you've done it is the biggest healing.
I agree. Mm. Like, you're sort of 80% there.
Yeah.
But first of all, you got to stop judging yourself because you can see it, you've observed it, and you're seeking help in response to it. But that makes a lot of sense to me, that your lens is pretty much fixed.
Yeah.
So can you clean your lens?
You can, and you can clean your lens. Your beliefs are constantly being updated, and that's why the sleep cycle is also very important. Yeah. So the last part of our sleep, when we're about to wake up, a lot of our beliefs are actually clearing up at that point as well.
Interesting.
Our critical filters clear up as well. Yes, we can clear. But what's important to understand is that your ability to take in that information still to a huge extent remains the same. You can do a lot of inner work to change how you respond to it. And that's where you're cleaning your filter.
Yeah, yeah.
You're clearing the lens.
That's what creates
so
the change.
When you really, you know, reach a stage from, I want to change that, nothing's happening for me, I want to change it to, it is what it is, but I'm going to be okay.
Yep.
And that's where it kind of...
That's where it goes,
yeah.
And with a lot of my much more sort of esoteric, magical communities, you know, we set up sort of frameworks where they can run at what they would normally fight,
mm-hmm,
like, and embrace it. And just as a spiritual experiment, just say, okay, well, the next time that happens, instead of getting out your weapon and chopping the head off,
right,
run up and hug it.
Yeah.
because
it takes courage to do that.
Yeah, it does. It does. So that's why I just go, you know, just try it for 2 weeks and see what happens. And that sometimes can be enough.
Yeah.
Oh, all right. Look, we're on time. One last question, Bharti, is what's next for you? So you're very highly regarded. You're very busy. You know, you've got clients here. You've got clients all over the place. Sure. Do you? Your children are young. So where's the trajectory for you?
I love doing one-on-one work, but what really gets me energized is working with bigger audiences, bigger groups. And once, you know, the pandemic is behind us, I think that's where I'm really going to go back into. I really enjoy working with huge groups of people, whether it's group healing, whether it's training, whether it's just working with the subconscious mind, tools and processes.
Beautiful.
Yeah.
So that's more the corporate arena, or not necessarily?
Not necessarily. So like, you know, we can have big energy circles, we can have retreats, we can have spiritual circles. So yeah. I love all of that.
Me too.
Yeah.
Me too. And I miss it. I miss it. Yes, we should. Yes. Yeah. But, you know, five people doesn't quite cut it, does it? I mean, it can.
I'm waiting patiently.
Me too. Me too. Me too. Yeah. Yeah, the little intimate circles are beautiful, but the dynamic of a large large circle with a shared intent, there's nothing like it.
I just thrive on that. I get so energized when I work with large number of people.
And big moves happen as well, don't they?
And you heal.
And you heal. Yeah, absolutely. Bharti, a total delight to talk to you. We may have to do a follow-up one because I've still got lots of questions.
Anytime. And it was such a pleasure to be with you and to speak with you.
Thank you, Bharti.
Thank you so much for having me here.